everyone, and welcome to a very special week of the Great Escape Minute. This week we are actually having conversations with people who have direct connections with the actual escape and the people who actually were part of the real escape. So, this is the podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today for the first of these special episodes is Patty Flint, someone who has a very interesting familial connection to one of the escapees. Welcome to the show, Patty.
How you doing, Rob? You all right?
I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to our conversations because this is the first opportunity that I've had to actually talk about the real people, not just the actors and the different characters in the movie. We're going to actually talk today. Besides, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the minute 166, but we're also going to be discussing some very, very interesting things that you have to tell us about some of the real escapees. One in particular, but I know you have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. Episode 166 begins with Danny and Willie climbing up the ladder to the boat and ends with Sedgwick checking that he's crossed the border into Spain. So as we were discussing on Friday, we had the beginning of Danny and Willie in their little rowboat reaching a large ship, and the ship stated on it that it was from Sweden. They actually start climbing up the ladder to the boat. Now, on Friday, I discussed what was in the real original script. They added a whole scene there with them actually talking to the people on the ship and how they helped them out in hiding them from a Nazi patrol boat that was around there. But for some reason, probably for good reason, they cut that out. So we're not really going to talk about that. So basically, we get the two of them climbing up the ladder, and they push off the rowboat to let it go wherever it's going to go. And they begin climbing up the ladder. And that's pretty much all we see of them. If I remember correctly, I don't think we even see them again in the movie. Very possible that this is the final time.
Yeah, I find it really strange that they would, you know, really neatly organize the oars back on the little rowboat and then kick it away. You know, you're just thinking, just leave it. It's going to end up going somewhere. So you might as well just leave it to do what they need to do.
Maybe they wanted to keep it for somebody else to be able to steal it. You know, so if the oars were to fall out, then they'd have a little bit of problem there. You know,
absolutely,
for whoever else got it. I guess they were grateful for the fact that someone left the oars in the first place. So, you know, if they're going to give it to somebody else, you might as well make sure they get the oars there too.
Yeah, I think they're a braver man than I trying to get up that ladder as well. I would have, I haven't got such good sea legs, I don't think. I'll maybe not be able to do as good as they did.
Well, they are actors, you know.
Oh, yeah, this is it.
You have Charles Bronson and John Layton, you know. They had that quick scene where they just, you know, shoot them going from the boat onto the ladder, and that's it.
Yeah.
And they do it quite effectively. Now, one of the things that I liked was, is you see that Charles Bronson's character, Danny, gets closer to the ladder. He holds onto the ladder and then lets Willie go before him, which, again, we've discussed this so many times over the course of the last 165 episodes about how great of a connection the two of these guys had, that their friendship was bonded throughout the course of the time that I guess they were in captivity together. And we get to see here another small example of that, you know, that they both know they're trying to go for freedom, but one of them will stop and actually help the other before moving along.
Yeah, very much so.
So I like that little touch.
The little pieces of help and the little sort of go-betweens between them, especially earlier on during the escape scenes, when they're going through the tunnel, you know what Danny's problem was down there. And
claustrophobia.
Yeah, it was this amazing camaraderie between the pair of them. And I suppose that sums up a lot of the way the military works as well. So.
Yeah, even though, I mean, we never find out if they flew together or anything. We just know that they were captured at some point and, you know, ended up in some sort of camp together and became the two Tunnel Kings.
They did, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know who the two of them are based on, right? Or not?
Well, the actual escape to Sweden was Jens Muller and Per Bergsland, who were two of the three home runners. So the story behind how they got away, they traveled for quite a long distance. They were heading for a port of Stettin. And they were given an address. Roger Bushell gave them a contact. for a building in Stettin where they could go and find someone to help them out. They knocked on the door and it was full of sailors and things like that, and they thought to themselves, well, this would be okay. They didn't have much money, and it turns out they were in a house of ill repute. So
they found a brothel.
Yeah, hey, they had.
I think at that point they needed money.
yeah. And at one point, one of the ladies of negotiable affection came up and said, you know, what do you want? Should we go upstairs? And he said, I haven't got any money. So the girl said, well, I'll take your suitcase. And he had this suitcase with him for his, full of all his stuff for escaping and his clothes and everything else he had. He said, I really can't let that go, you know. And I think the scene where the Germans came in and searched them would have been so much more accurate, because at one point they were searched as they were leaving. A German boat came alongside, checked them out, and they heard they were hidden in a small cargo hold, way down in the hull of the ship. And at one point, one of them was poked in the eye by a searcher, who ended up saying, "Nice, you know nothing, can't find anything," and then left. That's how close they were to getting captured.
Wow.
So it was an incredible story, and how they managed to get away was just crazy.
Wow, okay. And so that was one of them, and the other one? Or they were both together there?
Yeah, they were both together. Muller and Berglund were together, and we'll go on to Sedgwick's character in a minute.
But it's interesting that you mention that, because in the original script, there are a lot of things that Sedgwick does in the movie that they call the character Cavendish, and vice versa.
Yeah,
because in the original script, there was a guy named Merivale, who was the third guy to eventually get out.
Yeah.
So we don't know really. So a lot of things that they said about Merivale ended up being with Sedgwick.
Yeah.
So they obviously changed things during the course of the various incarnations of the script.
Yeah, because the other escaper, Sedgwick's character, was actually Dutch. He was Bob van der Stock, or Bram van der Stock, as he was known. To me, you could have got Dick Van Dyke in with his Mary Poppins accent to do the same sort of thing. But let's be talking about that.
Yeah, but it's, you know, we can talk about that as much as we want about the accent, but the truth is it makes him stand out so much more because of that terrible accent than he would have if he did a real accent. So
yeah.
Maybe, who knows, maybe he did it on purpose.
Yeah, perhaps.
You know, we've mentioned it many times that, you know, how crazy his accent is, you know, back in the third week when we even had J-Bam on and we were talking, you know, with an Australian who was mentioning the whole way that the actual his accent was completely off. But maybe it was done on purpose.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. Well,
and we shall never know.
Absolutely.
Because Coburn's not around to tell us anymore.
No. Sadly no.
Whether that's right, unfortunately not. So the minute continues and we now get to see Cedric, yeah, as we just mentioned previously.
Exactly.
And he shows up in a lush forest area, still carrying his suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny is it really looks as if that suitcase is very light.
Yeah.
He's got nothing in there.
Yeah.
He's carrying around this big empty suitcase.
Especially when he put it on the bike. Yeah. When he takes the,
yes,
bike, he just puts this, you know, it's like styrofoam, just down, off you go.
and it doesn't fall.
No.
It found a way to stay there.
Yeah.
And then we see a character wearing a French beret emerging with Sedgwick, and there's a third character with them also. And at this point, Sedgwick says, I'm just gonna forget about trying to say it in their original languages, because I'm terrible at French and German and Spanish pronunciations and stuff like that. So basically, Sedgwick says, "Here," and then the French guy goes, "Yes, sir, it's here." So at that point, Sedgwick says to him, "So goodbye."
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And then he says, "Thank you very much, sir." And he says, "You're welcome. Goodbye. Goodbye. Good luck." And it's funny. I mean, the conversation when they're saying it in French sounds like they're saying something much more interesting.
Yeah.
But they're basically just saying goodbye. I mean, we don't know how far he has traveled with these particular men. Mm. But it's just funny the way that they say it. And then they basically just leave him and walk off.
Yeah, yeah. And as if
they're like you're on your own.
Yeah, and as if by magic, there's a Spanish resistance guy just waiting for him. You know, just
exactly
seamless handover.
Exactly, completely. And then I love the fact that Cedric just like waves at them goodbye, and then he just takes a few steps, looks around at the forest and the terrain around him, and at this point, then he hears like a twig snapping, and quickly his head. Turns to the other side, and then we have a man standing on the side quietly, which apparently he wasn't that quiet because he, you know, stepped on a twig and made noise beforehand. He actually looks very similar to the first guy who...
He really does, doesn't he? Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. He's the same actor.
Yeah, maybe it's a Pyrenees, maybe it's a Pyrenean thing. They're just related from across the border or something. Twins. Who knows?
Exactly. And then the guy looks out into the distance and then looks to Cedric and says, I'm your guide, senor. He gives the nice heavy Spanish accent.
That was a great one. You do accent.
No, but the accent, I can do an English accent with it, but I can't do the pronunciation in the foreign language.
Fair enough.
I guess this guy really wasn't a Spanish actor. They just found some extra and said, okay, you look Spanish. Just say the word senor and we're good.
The one that he reminds me so much of one of the old gringos out of the Western movies, you know? Here we are, senor. That's it.
Exactly. You know? That's right. All you do is just lower your voice.
Yeah.
You know, give it a deeper intonation.
Bit of growl.
And throw in the word senor and you're good. And then the last words of this minute are Cedric saying, for Spain? Meaning, where does he think he is?
Yeah.
The other guys just left him, you know, he must know where he is. Yeah, and that pretty much ends the minute. Now our listeners don't know, but I know. What is your personal connection to The Great Escape? Why don't you tell us that story?
Okay.
I'd love to hear it.
So when I was a young boy, 7 or 8 years old, I was a big fan of reading. My mother and my grandmother had a massive collection of books. So I was looking for something else to read, and I found Brickhill's book, The Great Escape, just sat
there. Wait, is that a book or a novel?
Definitely a book. Most definitely not.
Definitely a book. It's a non-fiction book. Yes.
So I saw this book and I thought, right, I'm gonna read this. And literally, and I'll tell you now, this isn't the copy of it, but I have a copy of it right here. And the very first words that come out, the in that first chapter, was Roger Bushell had just turned 30 when he reached Dolagluth. And my grandmother had underlined it in pencil and written, a cousin of ours. So he was my grandmother's cousin, which is kind of, I think we were discussing it earlier, but second cousin.
I think it's a first cousin twice removed.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Well,
if it's your grandmother's first cousin.
Yeah. So I was in awe of this, and I read this thing from every page, every word. I just soaked it in all the photographs, you know, really got into it. And then I watched the movie. It was the UK. It was Christmas. Of course the movie's going to be on. You know, as it was every year. So I took it on and I watched the movie and I loved it. I was really engrossed in it and it was exciting and it was funny and it was emotional. And I thought to myself, it's just not the same, you know, but it's great in its own right, you know, on its own merit. It's a fantastic movie, one of the all-time greats. But then when you read into the book and you have an understanding of how it happened, it's very, very different. So a number of years later, I decided to join the RAF.
One second. I just want to ask a question.
Yeah, sure.
Did you discuss it with your grandmother about him or anything like that at this point?
I did, yeah. Now my grandmother always found him quite an aloof kind of character, you know, and subsequent meetings with Jimmy James, Jack Lyon, people like that, very much sort of underlined that he was a very driven man. He was very single-minded. So later on down the line, I met Jimmy James at a medal presentation. And he said, Roger once sat there and said, I'm not here to be like Jimmy. I'm here to get as many people out as possible.
Wow.
And that was, he said, I'm not here to make friends, because he knew what the consequences would be. He knew that some of them may not come home, you know, so, and that's what he did. He was already on borrowed time anyway, but he just kind of chased everyone else along for the ride. You know, everyone came with him because he was that kind of character, I think. But yeah, so my grandmother always thought he was quite aloof. But I think he was just a very driven kind of guy, a very motivated individual, and someone who took leadership and responsibility very, very seriously.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you discuss the movie with your grandmother at that point?
Yeah. We used to watch it together. My grandmother died a little while afterwards, just, you know, a couple of years after I started seeing the movie and getting really into it. But she was never... She liked that Richard Attenborough had been cast as Bartlett or Bushell, you know.
Right.
She thought that was great, but she always said, you know, he was skinnier. He was, he wasn't so rounded a face. He was very, you know, very angular, was Roger, you know. So, I think the love of the movie was separate. You know, we kept them both kind of separate, because I'll watch the movie all day, every day, if I could. I would just go back and back and back, because it's always, same as every great movie, there's always something that brings you back. One line or a character that you didn't see before, or an event in the background that you sort of went, I didn't notice that before, you know?
Well, I hope that this podcast isn't going to ruin it for you, because now we're going to hopefully tell you all just about everything that...
No.
I know you've been listening, so, you know, if we're going to give away all the secrets, the next time you watch the movie, you're going to say, oh, I didn't know everything about it.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's possible. You know, I could go and watch it tomorrow and still love it as much as that first time. You know, it's one of those great movies.
Yeah, okay. No, I completely agree. I mean, obviously, as you know, I've seen this movie so many times, especially recently, even in small spurts of watching the same minute over and over. So, but I've still, I rewatched it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It wasn't that I felt that anything was taken away from it.
Yeah.
It was, and if anything, it was enhanced, because there were things that I now understood better, and there are things that I was able to catch.
Mm. Well, it's like a good song that you analyze and find a new vocal part, a new guitar part, something that brings you back into that. It's the same with that, you know.
That's true.
It's always
right. Okay, so yeah. So I cut you off before.
Okay.
Continue with your story.
Well, my family's always been very military, you know. Many generations of my family have served in the armed forces, and I did that myself. Back in 1999, I joined up. And I joined up as a Royal Air Force policeman. So this was, I just thought, well, I'm just going to be a... Well, I joined up to be a dog handler, police dog handler. And I was chatting away with the I suppose he's the instructor, the chief instructor. He was a flight sergeant. And he said, I was standing next to the Great Escape display that they had down there, because... The RAF police, the biggest investigation ever carried out by a military is the Great Escape, the murders, the investigation into the murders of the 50. And it's still the biggest mm-hmm. wartime investigation ever carried out. So this was a big thing for me. And I was telling this flight sergeant all about it, who turned out to be the Royal Air Force police historian. Who started, you know, cogs started whirring in his head, and he started getting all these ideas. And randomly, 2 days later, he came into the classroom and said, Flint, out here. And I thought, uh-oh, what have I done? So I go outside, and there's another recruit, another trainee standing there, a guy from two courses behind me. And he says, this is, meet Taylor. Taylor, meet Flint. You guys are related. And I said, what? So Taylor... Nigel Taylor, this guy that was two courses behind me, his mother was a Bushell,
Oh, wow.
So this small world suddenly became, you know, even smaller.
Even smaller.
And then we found out that one of the other sergeants that was an instructor there, her grandfather was Freddie Bowes, who was the lead investigator of the murder. So it's,
whoa,
it's all kind of, it was really spooky. So, you know, I've kept up with it all the way through the years. And in 2018, I went over to Zagan, to Stalaglyph 3, and visited the site and, you know, commemorated Roger's life and the life of the 50 and all POWs. And that was really moving, so much so that I was there for the 75th anniversary the following year. And I got to hold Roger Bushell's image as I paraded down through on the ceremony, which was very emotional, very emotional.
Wow.
But it's, yeah, it's, wow, it's my little connection, and, you know, I'm very proud of it. My family's very proud of it. So it's been, yeah, it's been a big part of my life.
Okay, well, I'm glad that the fact that they made a movie about it and, you know, used Richard Attenborough with a round face, Richard Attenborough,
but then
didn't ruin it for
no. But then who else could you put in there? No, they needed a brooding character, and I think Richard Attenborough did it pretty well. You know, he was quite sharp with people, and he was quite, you know, it's quite full on. It's an intense character.
Yeah, completely. Wow. All right, that is fascinating. It really is. So, you have anything else particularly you want to say about this minute?
Just a very brief one on Bob van der Stock. The actual escape took months, absolutely months. And I found it.
Bob van der Stock is the one that's theoretically Sedgwick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just clarifying that.
So he was a Dutch pilot, and he was captured and taken all around the various places. But his escape took months. He traveled through Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, you know, and then eventually back to Spain, got through to Spain, and from Spain back to the UK, and then back into the fight again, you know?
Oh, wow. Wait, he made it to Spain. So the Spain part, I guess, is sort of true.
Yeah, yeah.
But he probably wasn't carrying an empty suitcase.
No styrofoam cases to be seen. I think they were, it was harsh. There were very harsh conditions. And he was traveling with a number of other people. It wasn't just this solo Mio, I'm off cycling around Europe, you know. it wasn't quite that simple.
Well, who was he traveling with? Because there were only three home runs.
Well, that was
so
it.
Who did you hook up with?
So Muller and Bergsland were together, and he went solo Mio. Off he went. He disappeared off on his own.
Right, but you just said he wasn't on his own.
No, he ended up under the French resistance, and they had, or the Maquis, and they ended up with, I think it was a couple of Canadians and various other people, not involved in the escape. They were just with the resistance trying to get home or trying to get away. So that last scene would have been a line of 20, 25 people all crossing into Spain rather than just...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there were a lot of people, a lot of people. But this was the resistance, this is what they did, you know?
Yeah, really is. Well, that's really just mind-boggling and fascinating at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you if they're interested?
Well, yeah. I mean, just have a look for me on Facebook, Paddy Flint. There is also a Great Escape Stalaglyph 3 Facebook group, which I'm one of the admins of. So if you want to have a look for that, you can find out anything you need. There's some really, really knowledgeable ladies and gentlemen on there. Plenty to learn about.
Yeah, we're gonna talk with a few of them this week also, so that you know, people will hear it throughout the week. I know we have at least two more coming later this week from the Facebook. You want to come back again tomorrow?
Sure, sure, absolutely.
All right, excellent. You're looking at the Facebook group of Stalaglyph 3. You can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher they might be using to listen to this show. You can go to our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!